Welcome friends, this is Henrik Palmgren and you are listening to Red Ice Creations Radio. This is internet talk radio recorded from the west coast of Sweden. You can hear a new show every Sunday and Thursday at redicecreations.com. So drop by, check out our website for fascinating news updated on a daily basis and also our free radio archive and much, much more, all there for you to enjoy. This is our first show in 2007 and we begin today with our regular Christopher Morse, who is here with us for his monthly visit and update from creativecosmos.org. Chris is on with us the first Thursday of every month and today we also have a special guest joining us, so stay tuned, fun things ahead. Before we continue, let me say thanks to Marta Williams for being with us last week for a wonderful program talking about nature and animal communication. And if you missed that or any of our previous shows, just head on over to our archives and check it out. All right, now let's get this show on the road. Welcome everybody. Today we have Christopher Morse back with us for his monthly visit and we also have a very special guest with us today joining us and this will be lots of fun. We've spoken a bit to our guest here before we came on here and guys came up for an excellent title for this show. It's called Will the Uproar Beat the Crackdown? And as I said, this is going to be lots of fun. And maybe we can ask Chris, you know, if we'd like to introduce our guest today and say a few words about him. But before we get into that, just let me say hello to Chris first and welcome you back to the program. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing great, man. Glad to be here and glad to keep having at her and doing our thing and coming up with new ways to encode that information we need out there.
Absolutely, and as always, it's awesome to have you here, Chris. And let's get to our guest right away. Why don't you kind of do a little intro, if you will, Chris, of our guest today?
Sure, my pleasure. This is something I've wanted to do for quite some time, is to have our guest on here today because he's been a big influence in my life, and in fact, he was one of the key persons that helped me wake up and get out of the matrix and start healing myself. And, you know, my life has never been the same since. It's just gotten better and better. And so I really wanted to have a chance for him to share with the world what he shared with me and what has touched me so deeply. And I wrote up a little, with a conversation with him, I wrote up a little, what I called a mystical bio here for our purposes today. So I'll go ahead and just, I'll just read that out right now here.
Yeah,
and we'll get him going here. So here we go. Chabda Noir has spent a lifetime synthesizing the wisdom traditions of the East and West. A musician and meditator, he has assimilated many sources into his own unique vision. His spiritual quest began with the Theosophists and then moved on to an extensive study of the Paul Foster Case course. This provided him with a profound understanding of the Tarot, astrology, and Kabbalah. Then Shab was to go right for the heart, getting deeply involved with Yogananda's teaching and finally making the leap to Osho. As a sannyasin, he lived in Osho's commune first in India and later in Oregon in the USA. Free of the mind with an open heart, he embodies what it is to be on the path of enlightenment. Connected to the universe, he reveals cosmic truths we all seek to ascertain. So from myself and on behalf of Henrik and Red Ice and the whole family here, welcome to the show, Shabda.
Well, thank you very much. I'm thrilled to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you.
Welcome, Shabda. Welcome. It's very nice. Thank you for, you know, taking some time with us here today.
My pleasure.
Awesome. So why don't we kind of begin at the beginning, I guess? Tell us a little bit, if you will, about yourself, Shabda.
Well, let's see. Let me start with the day that I figured out that something was terribly wrong. I was about 33 years old. I woke up one morning and just had a very, very stunning realization that, let me put it in the form of a question, is this all there is? Let me elaborate a little bit. I had a wonderful family, wonderful wife, and I had, as a musician, had won many top honors, including a Rockefeller grant. And had had pieces performed by the Dallas Symphony Orchestra, and had gotten some pretty good recognition as a jazz trumpet player and writer, and it wasn't enough. What was it? And then so that began my search, is why was I feeling incomplete when I had just, in just a brief 33 years, had gotten so much back from my environment. And then it hit me. The inner me was full of slush. Let's put it that way. Full of unresolved things that were coming up and haunting me. And basically I realized that my entire training had taught me how to be phony. And that was the reason I had gotten such terrific success in the outer world, is because we're all, because of our upbringing, this includes our religion, this includes our training at school, which is basically left brain oriented. It's really not training, it's propaganda.
Yeah.
At least in America it is. It's propaganda that you are expected to spit back as your tests, and if you get the rubber stamp, that means that you have swallowed the philosophy, whether you like it or not. And so I, during parts of my awakening, I realized that, no, I don't agree with all of this. In fact, I don't agree with very much of it. So this started my my search, and I'm an avid reader. I read, you know, everything I could get my hands on. One day, a friend of mine, another trumpet player, name of Jeff Beer, wonderful trumpet player, lives in Chicago and is still playing. He said, you know, you really ought to listen to a couple of tapes that I have. I've got this crazy master that has a laughing meditation. I said, what? A laughing meditation? And he said, yeah. He said, you know, you should come over to my place, or I'll come over to your place. I'll bring this tape where he explains what this is. And I said, well, okay. So he did. He came over, and we listened to this, and he showed me a short written instructions. And basically what you do for 1 month, I would recommend this to anybody. The first thing you do when you first wake up is you start laughing. In a way, you're kind of forcing it at the beginning, but once you hear yourself forcing yourself to laughter, it becomes so absurd that you really end up really laughing. And it goes deeper and deeper. Now, you do this every morning for 15 minutes for 1 month, and then look and see what has happened to your life. Everything is so lightened up, it's just ridiculous. So I thought, man, I've got to meet this guy. So I found myself going to India, wondering, what are you doing all by yourself, right? Going there to see this unknown person, and only to find out that really he isn't a person. He's a presence. That was the first time I realized that what my problem with myself was that I was still a person. I was not yet a presence. And you can't get any instructions on how to get there. And the thing that turned me on my head was that Rajneesh explained, he's now called Osho. At the time, he was called Rajneesh. He explained that you're already there. It's not an achievement. You are there. It's just covered up by your training, your conditioning.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of shaking off your conditioning, and you will get to where you already are. And so, let's see, where did it go from there? I was working as a musician in Chicago, and my mother died. And this allowed me to... One of the things, other than her death, one of the aftermaths was I was able to clear all of my debts because I did have a small inheritance. And it just hit me again one morning getting up. Well, if you were going to go do anything like disappear from the status quo, you could do it today.
Yeah.
I promptly sold everything except for my trumpet, my car, my clothes. I sold everything. And within 1 month, I was in Oregon at the commune, the Osho commune in Rajneeshpuram, and was able for 3 years to see how the American government works when it wants to shut something down. And that was a profound shock because I really believed everything I had been taught as a child about how we really are the good guys in every case, which is pretty much what you're taught. I see it now as conditioning. I see it now as entering the matrix and turning your subconscious view that something's not quite right, learning to ignore that. That's pretty much how I see education in the United States. From the very beginning. So it was a rude awakening. And then this was during the Reagan administration. And I watched how the U.S. government at every level, from local right up to the top, did everything that they could to shut us down and shut him up because he was criticizing the government and they didn't want to hear that. Now, on the other hand, the people who were running our commune went off to the dark side. As a result of fighting, it's the classic example of when you're fighting your enemy, you become just like your enemy. And if you don't, you're not going to win. Well, everybody lost. You know, they ended up deporting him for practically, I can't really go into the... actual causes because I don't quite understand exactly the charges, but it was a pretty big mess and a miscarriage of justice, that's for sure. He claimed that while he was incarcerated that the U.S. government poisoned him with thallium poisoning, which was verified at his death. His health declined very, very rapidly after he left the United States. And it was corroborated by the best laboratory in England that this man had been poisoned and that was the reason for his death.
Yeah, you might mention that, like, during the time when
in the commune, as you were saying, those people who were becoming like their enemy to fight the enemy, during a lot of this time, Osho himself was in silence, you know.
And like Osho told was me, in silence,
and you told me before, like, he probably was pretty conscious, like, almost allowing it to just go, and almost as an experiment how that went.
Let me put that in perspective. Mm-hmm. He spoke for years and years, 7 days a week, on just about every religious doctrine and every ancient book. Sort of, his comments were just so enlightening. He said, you know, would read the original text and say, look, this is what they're talking about. It was just turning a light on to all of these different traditions and showing how they're basically talking about the same thing, but they're looking at it through a different window. Each one. By the time he came to the United States, he said, well, I have said it, and I have said what I want to say in every way that I know. And so I am going to stop speaking, which he did.
Hmm.
The idea being, and he said, you all have absolute freedom. I'm your guest in the commune. I am not the leader. In fact, you guys do what you want to do. In other words, he gave us free rein. I'm sure that he saw everything that was going on. This man was intensely clear. And I know that he saw everything. And it was as if he had tied a string around each of our necks and was, like a fisherman, was letting the line out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time when our leadership had been engaging in illegal acts themselves, he suddenly cried, stop, and he pulled all the strings as if to say, now, look at what you have done. Look at what you have distorted from what I've been telling you forever and ever. You didn't get it. I mean, he never really came out and said that, but this is the way it looked to me, is that his message was, I'm not even dead yet, and look at how you have distorted my message. And then he went on to say, and that every single one of the religions that we have today is in the same mess. Very well-meaning people start interpreting what the master has to say, and they don't get it right. And then this is taught over and over and over. Each time, each generation, it degrades farther and farther away from what the master was really talking about. By the time 500 years has gone by, the so-called religion has nothing to do with the person that they are supposedly revering.
Yeah.
And that this is the state of most religions. Now, I don't want to get in trouble with the religious community, but this, at least I can say from my own experience that I have watched this happen to most of Osho's message. Now, the one thing that is nice is that what we did as a group, we simply recorded and videotaped everything that he said. So it's pretty hard to mess with it.
Hmm.
Even though toward the end of our experience there at the ranch, that when he came back, he started speaking again when he saw what was going on. At the very end, he did start speaking again. Hmm. And the leadership, I think for a couple of very significant discourses that he gave, those tapes disappeared.
Of course.
Because he was exposing what was going on, and they didn't want the rest of us to hear it. And we found all this out later.
Yeah.
So what has happened since then is I came back out into the world after having been completely away from television, and I'll never forget, my daughter was also on the commune, and when the commune had to be shut down, we were driving back to my brother's house, and we stayed overnight at a motel, and we thought, God, we haven't seen TV in 3 years. I wonder what's on. So we turned the TV on and got to a commercial, and it was like this big mud ball hitting you right in the face, you know, splat. And we both started laughing hysterically because we had heard in the news over and over again about how we had been hypnotized by Osho.
Yeah.
And I thought, who's hypnotizing who? Oh, man. And I mean, and it's constant. It's constant. The hypnosis, David Icke is right when he says that really what TV is mass hypnosis.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very effective. It's very effective.
Yeah.
Yeah. TV programs.
You know, in America now, you're made to feel guilty if you don't have the right ailments and don't take the right pharmaceutical. Well, it's true. Something's wrong with me. Gee, my stomach isn't ever upset.
Oh, my gosh.
So we'll jump a little bit later. After I retired from the University of Illinois, I had time to actually read all the books that were on my to-read list that I had bought along the, you know, many. I had stacks of books that I just didn't have time to read when I was fully employed, and so I was catching up, and it's odd. I know that I was just talking to Chris the other day that Osho had explained over and over again that there were really two conspiracies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
One is by the priest, the other is by the politician. The priest wants control of your soul. The politician wants control of your money.
Mm.
And the two are in cahoots.
Yeah.
They're in the same bed. But it's the cover-up is extremely effective. But he never really gave the details. He didn't name names. It was enough to name, to just tell the basic situation that this is what you're dealing with.
Mm.
And this is the conditioning that he was asking us to drop. And he says, once you drop that conditioning, your natural self, which has been there all along, will bloom all by itself. You don't need any help. It's already there.
Yeah.
You just need to get back in touch, you know.
Yeah.
Now, recently now, I have discovered David Icke's material, and David names names and dates, and the whole thing, just in the last 2 months, has just suddenly become clear. I guess it's been a long, long process for me, but now I can see that, just until just fairly recently, I was really still stuck in the matrix.
Hmm. Hmm.
Because I couldn't see how the stuff that I was reading that I basically agreed with, I couldn't see quite how it still affected me every day.
Hmm, yeah.
Now I see it a lot clearer. I hope this lasts. I've gone through different periods where I do see things clearly, and then it begins to fade, and then you're left with a mess, with a memory that you're not quite sure now, but you're sure that you have known.
Hmm.
You know, and then it fades because I guess it's because the pressure and
is, well, that's kind of the
it's
satori.
Coming at you from every angle.
Yeah. That's kind of what they call satori. Like, so you have these moments of awareness where you have clarity, and then I think that's kind of what we work towards, where the clarity, those moments of clarity become, you know, more frequent and longer until we eventually, you know, get to that state. I remember, you know, in our early work together, and, you know, I first had my moment of awakening, and it just was overwhelming, and I felt really clear, you know, and then it's because, you know, the heart blasts open, and suddenly you're a part of this great celebration, you know, and suddenly life is all around, and everything you see, that everything that happened was to get you to this point. You know, it's like you have your events and you have things, and you might think they have to do with your life and it's moving forward in this direction or that direction or that direction, but in the end they're all meant to turn you back on yourself, which is part of you know, the pressures of the world and all the thing that's going on in the world. Well, what is it doing? It's turning many of us back in upon ourselves. And, you know, once we do, you know, there's all those things to sort through and get through. But that's why, where if we can go for the heart, you know, this is another thing of Osho, and what Shab showed me through Osho is when you open the heart, that's like it gets you right there. You know, they used to say the phrases like hell bent for enlightenment, or, you know, he always threw all these kind of phrases around, because you could, you know, you can get right there, and then it's like, I know for myself, my mind, you know, your mind is a little, has to come around to what the heart feels, you know. My mind was like, but a heart knew the truth. And once you make that link, you got to stick with it, and then you can sort out through the mind from perspective of heart, and you could trace all these things back, and you know, as they come up, and you have awareness and a watchful state, you can let them pass through, and then you restore that energy to yourself, and more you catch up with the heart, and then that awareness and clarity is a part of every moment of your life.
Yeah, he had, as usual, a very classic way of describing what you're just talking about. He would say, the heart always sees the truth. The head is always a politician. So who are you going to trust?
Yeah. So do you, I mean, clamp down basically that took place here on this camp. Do you, I mean, was there any kind of, you know, violence involved? I mean, because we can.
You're talking about the commune.
The closing of the commune. Exactly, because, you know, this kinds of, you know, reminds me of, you know, stuff that has been going on in U.S. history, like, you know, the Waco incident and stuff like this. I mean, that they break up different.
It came very close. It came very close to that. In fact, Osho put a stop to everything before it could come to that. He did that by calling a press conference and explaining what his own people had done was, again, had broken many laws, and it was he who called the FBI in and said, we want you to come here. He did that because what was happening the last year is the leadership of the commune was really arming themselves. They were walking around with pistols and guns. There was a helicopter with machine guns that flew overhead every time Osho took a drive through the grounds. And, of course, all of us were horrified by what we were seeing because it was becoming, you know, very, very volatile. And we didn't realize, we were protected, and I didn't realize how much violent opposition there was in the outside world. I mean, you've got to realize, here we were in the middle of nowhere, literally. I mean, we were on a 124-square-mile plot of land, big as New York City. in the high tundra region of northwestern Oregon, miles and miles away from anything except ranches. I mean, this was a ranch that had been overgrazed for 150 years. It had been for sale for 50 years. No one wanted it. The government rated the land as the lowest rating that it has. In other words, it was totally useless, which was why we got it. Now, when we got it, within 3 years, we built a city of 5,000 people. We built a resort lake. We held festivals that fed 20,000 people every day with tent cities throughout the entire valley of all these people that would come. And this was how the ranch survived. We were growing things in the most high-tech advanced way, growing crops in Oregon that had never been grown before. And we recycled 70% of our waste, and it was a totally self-sufficient thing with the festivals. Now, the reason that we had to shut it down was that the U.S. government deported Osho, and without him, there could be no festival. That was how they broke it. Let's see. I've strayed from the point a little bit.
Sure.
Chris, help me out here. What were we talking about?
one of the things that my mind was going over while you were talking earlier is when we were talking about doing the show is why the people didn't speak up more and the mechanism of that. I think that would be a really important point to bring up.
Okay, yeah. About 2 years into the experiment, the leadership became more and more repressive in terms of shutting down any kind of dissenting viewpoint that wasn't part of the status quo for the commune. And most of us realized, you know, that this was totally against what we were intending to do. And we thought, you know, we all kind of took the attitude that, well, let's let the power people grapple with their power desires and stuff. I don't really want to get into that. I want to live my, do my meditation, have a wonderful life, which most of us were having a wonderful life. Of course, the press couldn't understand it at all. To the press, it looked like we were working 12 hours a day. And to us, we weren't working at all. We were playing. We were playing 12 hours a day. We were playing at whatever we were doing, you know, whether it would be washing dishes. The idea was if you were washing dishes during a shift, you turn the washing dishes into a dance. So you weren't washing dishes. You were dancing dishes. And, you know, and there were quite a few water fights that were really fun. If people would begin to become weary, somebody would put a Michael Jackson CD on there and it would come over the loudspeaker unannounced, and suddenly everyone would drop what they were doing and boogie down for 20 minutes. And then we'd go back to what we were doing. So it was very loose. It was incredible what we were able to do. The downfall is that those of us who saw that things were beginning to spoil in the structure, we didn't speak up. And that was our mistake. And that's what I'm concerned with. Most people in America today, I think, are pretty horrified by what's going on with our leadership. And we have the same, well, the excuse is, well, yeah, I do see this, and I don't want to really know about it. I'm too busy trying to make ends meet. I was talking to a friend of mine, Mark Rabideau, a wonderful trombone player who had been my right-hand man for a while when he was here at the University of Illinois when I was still teaching. At the beginning of my retirement, Mark invited me up to his school at Millersville University in Pennsylvania to do a month-long seminar, which I did, and we had a wonderful time. We got into a political discussion one evening, and I was expressing my concerns about where the United States was going, and to find that he had also the same concerns, and he was saying, you know, it's so frustrating because it says, now look at my situation. My wife, Mary Pauline, she teaches full-time at Rutgers University, and I am teaching, this is Mark speaking, I am teaching a two-thirds time here at Millersville, and I do the commute. Mary takes the kids for the 3 days that I'm gone, and I take the kids for the 4 days that she's busy doing what she's doing. And between the two of us, we're just working all the time and have not all that much time together because of the situation that we're in. And the bottom line is, how are we going to get our voices heard and to get involved at the grassroots political level to actually try to make our voices heard? And that's his, you know, he just kind of looked at me and said, you know, the politicians have structured our life now in such a way that nobody has time to protest.
Yep.
I mean, it's a pretty effective strategy. And ever since that was one of the conversations that just hit me like a bullet between the eyes, you know. And she was just dead right about that, is that what can we do? And I'm going to ask Chris to give the question again.
Will the uproar beat the crackdown?
Yeah, that's the situation that I see myself living in. Is that now I'm trying to be part of the uproar, you know, and thanks to Chris, this is part of my own uproar. I'd like to read just a little bit, if you wouldn't mind, a poem.
Sure, yeah.
I just had finished reading Amy Goodman's wonderful book called Static, which I would highly recommend to anyone listening. The name of the book is Static, Government Liars, Media Cheerleaders, and the People Who Fight Back. So it can give you examples of who the people are who are fighting back and what they're doing. The poem at the very end of the book I thought was very apropos to what we're talking about. It's let me read Amy Goodman's introduction to Alice Walker, what she says about Alice Walker. She is a renowned author, poet, and activist. She's perhaps best known for her book, The Color Purple, for which she won the Pulitzer Prize in 1983, becoming the first African-American woman to win the prize for fiction. This is her book, or her poem, rather. It's entitled, Be Nobody's Darling. Be nobody's darling. Be an outcast. Take the contradictions of your life and wrap around you like a shawl the party stones to keep you warm. Watch the people succumb to madness with ample cheer. Let them look askance at you, and you askance reply, be an outcast. Be pleased to walk alone. uncool. Or line the crowded riverbeds with other impetuous fools. Make a merry gathering on the bank, where thousands perished for brave hurt words they said. But be nobody's darling. Be an outcast, qualified to live among your dead.
That's nice.
Yeah.
That's pretty heavy stuff.
Yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it goes into that point, like another reason why people don't speak up is because they don't want to be an outcast. You know, they feel like a lot of people get really freaked out or scared or deny or try to keep the lid on all these things.
I know that most people in the United States, the predominant number of people in the United States, have no idea what's really going on, mainly because the media doesn't say what's really going on. Amy Goodman does. Democracy Now, I'm talking about democracynow.org, which is a daily TV show that is shown here in Urbana on public TV, Channel 6, which I would highly recommend. She tells the real news. And she does speak out, and her whole premise is that you have to hold power accountable.
Yeah, that's the way it's supposed to be.
That's the way media is supposed to be. Now, it's no longer like that in the United States.
It feels like the difficult part also about all this is they're playing on a field or should I say it on a level which is oriented around power and basically they come from they're playing on a field where a lot of people might not even want to be, and the difficult part is that these two, it feels like to me at least, that these two don't, connect. Basically what I'm saying is that if you're trying to prevent all of this stuff, you have to kind of go into their arena and play their game, because they are playing it with, it's a negative game that is evolved around power. And it's very difficult if you don't want to kind of go there into that arena to do anything about it. I mean, I don't mean to, that we are helpless in any way, but it feels like, like the commune you were describing earlier with Osho. I mean, there you guys were able to do something without, getting political. You didn't have to enter their arena. You could basically just, live your lives and do what you wanted to do without, getting political, basically. Agree hear what I'm saying there?
Well, I was telling Chris the very same thing just the other day, is that I watched what happened at the commune that I could have been. I mean, I knew personally very well the leaders who had gone astray, and when I saw them going to the dark side, I didn't go and take them aside and say, "What are you doing?" And I had the personal contact. I knew these people, and I just kind of moved further and further away from the political crowd that was there.
Yeah.
And now I see the same thing happening in the United States. And, first I saw my commune dissolved because those of us who could have spoken up didn't do that. The main fear that we had was that we would get kicked off, and which could have happened. I mean, it was pretty much a fascist state by the third year. Now, this couldn't have happened at the beginning, but it little by little, our freedoms were being eroded just by this event and that event, and it all seemed like it was necessary at the time. Now, I see the same manipulation happening nationwide. where our nation, our Constitution, is pretty much bogus now. Not after the Patriot Act, we don't have it. We don't have any rights.
Enabling Act and several other acts that just keep flying by under the radar, and hardly anybody even notices.
Yeah,
and you know,
most people don't realize how many freedoms have been taken away, and they don't realize it doesn't seem to affect their life right now.
Yeah,
you know, only I said, wait a minute.
Well, that's again, David Icke says
the earthquake
drip.
Midway.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, it's establishing a state of mind for years and years and years to come. They're trying to prepare the ground. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed, too, which might have been the case at the commune for you, Shab, and also in America, is for some reason people think it's not spiritual to speak up. You know, they somehow interpret it like they get this idea that being spiritual, you know, maybe it's a Christianized view or something where you got to be, like, passive and always in a good mood and always, oh, I love you, love you, love you. Everything's just great, great, great. Isn't this great? Yeah, you're great. I'm great. We're all great. Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, that's precisely the trap, you know, because Osho was a rebel, and the true spirit is not going to fall into that dangerous trap. The true spirit's going to speak the truth as they see it, you know. They shut, you know, spiritual. When you do that in the spiritual realm, they might say you're not spiritual. And if you do it in America right now, say, hey, wait a minute, this is going on. Well, you know, I've had myself. They immediately come and say, well, why do you hate America so much? You know, and that's designed to shut you down. You know, that's part of the program they instill on people through the television and through various ways. It becomes a subtle part of the lexicon, which has a built-in control over what you're supposedly allowed to foray into with your philosophical inquiry. You know, and then it paralyzes the person. You know, and you know, oh, I don't want to be the one who hates America. You know, blah blah blah. You know, but you can't allow them to put you into their paradigm. You know. As soon as I hear that, I immediately say, well, you must not have a very good reason, a very good philosophical argument, because all you're doing is just shutting things down. You're trying to shut me down, and that doesn't really count, you know. And where you were saying, talking about how to not fall and become like the enemy, well, it takes incredible personal discipline. You know, you have to keep the meditative state so you know that, you know, what they're doing is on the outside and not the essential truth. And even when you go into the world and you still have this meditative space, you still have, you know, that disconnect between all the things that are, you know, all the thoughts, ideas, feelings related to the outside, you still have a quiet center. And one of the guidelines I try to do is, you know, I don't try to take aggressive act, but these things will come to you. You know, the invasions will come to you, the aggression will come to you, and we as powerful spirit and divine human beings have a right to keep these invasions out, you see. And so we take strong action to keep them out, and we can address them when they come out. And that way, it's really, you know, Osho talks about choicelessness and choiceless awareness. And to me, if someone comes, starts banging me with lies, I don't really have a choice in the matter. I got a right to protect my spirit. I got a right to save my soul from this act of war and attempt to co-opt me into the program. And so I do. And in my world, that is a true spiritual act.
Yes. There is another side to the idea of meditation. Just in answer to the question, what can each of us do at the individual level that whereby you're not talking directly about politics, you're not on a radio show, which is a positive thing that I'm privileged to be able to do today, but on a daily level, the advice that I would give to people who want to disconnect from the matrix the Matrix being what we're subjected to, all the news and all the media and all the manipulation that's coming. The best thing you can do is set up quiet time for yourself and space out, which is basically what meditation is. It's not a doing at all. It's a disconnect from all the doing, all the thinking, all the stuff that keeps coming in through our senses. It's like taking time each day to disconnect from that. If everyone would do that, the Matrix would disappear. It takes our participation. It takes continuous being riled up one way or the other in the constant mental turmoil. Now, the antidote to that is just simply disconnect.
Also, I mean, I've been talking to my brother Frederick quite a lot about this, regarding, you know, those who might feel, you know, that they're waking up to and kind of have the eyes to see all of this stuff that we're talking about here, and at the same level, it feels like a lot of people want to, as soon as they discover that they, you know, are able to see this, that they want to kind of escape from it all because it's, you know, it's bad and all of this, but it feels like once you're, and I guess that it's also what you're saying here, Shab, because you know, we have to stay kind of, I guess, where we are and do the work in everyday life, because I guess that it is only there that the real changes are going to take place if we are to, you know, wake up our friends and family, I guess, all around us. But because if everyone who saw this kind of, you know, left for another place, basically, or something like this, we wouldn't have an awakening that we so desperately need at this point, basically.
Yeah,
that could even be part of how the divine plan, really, you know, you have a person in one family, you know, a person in this group, a person in this group, and you know, really the people who see that, you know, we need to encourage each other that, yes, this is happening, yes, this is the case, and stay the course. It might not always be easy, but over time, we'll get some inroads here, and you know, I've seen it in my own life, you know, and in my own family and friends that, you know, me staying the course and bringing all these ideas up and surrounding myself with these types of things, and even just like in terms of art on the wall or the kind of music I listen to or just topics of conversation, well, yeah, it does have an effect over time, and it does work on people. And you know, maybe it won't happen right away, you know, you can't always just grab someone and be like, wake up, you know, but
exactly, because that will only, I mean, that will actually scare a lot of people away from it.
Yeah,
I think
I mean, right off the bat, when I first kind of woke up, I was shouting her from the rooftops, and I kind of had to, you know, refine my methods and such. And you know, I also do this in the greater community too. You know, I might just put up a picture on some random wall somewhere so that every single person who walks by it will have just that little bit of exposure to something, which might become part of the cumulative effect, which will wake them up.
We will continue this discussion now in the subscriber section. If you're not a subscriber, do consider signing up with us, and you'll get full access to our archive, and at the same time you'll support this show and the website. Thank you all for listening to the show, and thanks to Big Bro behind the controls, Fredrik. We will be back this Sunday with Karen Tate, and we'll be talking about goddess worship and much more. We also got a subscriber interview with Michael Sarion on transhumanism and technology coming up this Sunday that you don't want to miss. So stay tuned to redicecreations.com, and we will talk more soon. This is Henrik Palmgren signing off.